from WSLR, LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota, and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Johannes Werner with your WSLR News headlines for Friday, June 13th. An affordable housing project for teachers in Sarasota is in limbo, the Florida Politics website reports. The EduDwell project, proposed by the Education Foundation of Sarasota County, would have included 82 attainable apartments on 9 floors in downtown Sarasota. Senator Joe Gruters and Representative Fiona McFarland supported it, and the foundation managed to have close to $1 million included in the 2026 budget proposal by the Florida House. That would have covered just a sliver of the close to $50 million cost, but it would have sent a signal to other funders. But now, in May, in what the foundation's president described as recalibrating, the foundation decided to sell the land on South Washington Boulevard that would have been home to EduDwell. And now, neither state budget proposal includes funding. Lecom Park, the spring training home of the Pittsburgh Pirates in Bradenton, will get a historical marker honoring the history of a local Negro League baseball team. The Bradenton Nine Devils played from 1937 to 1956 in the stadium formerly known as McCackney Field. The Nine Devils were part of the independent Florida State Negro League. The marker is donated by the Boxer Diversity Initiative and will be unveiled in a ceremony at the main entrance of the stadium this Saturday at 4. Officials once again reminded Floridians that the state is not California and threatened arrest and even death for protesters who become violent. Attorney General James Uthmeyer, at a press conference in Titusville with state and federal law enforcement leaders, said, quote, "Rioting will be nipped in the bud right away." Brevard County Sheriff Wayne Ivey said, quote, "If you throw a brick, a firebomb, or point a gun at one of our deputies, we'll be notifying your family where to collect your remains, because we will kill you graveyard dead," unquote. The press conference came in response to protests in other parts of the country that have turned violent against ICE officers. In Sarasota and Venice, no King's protests are planned for Saturday. Also, on Monday, immigrants' rights advocates are going to march across a bridge from Bradenton to Palmetto. This has been Johannes Werner with your WSLR News headlines for Friday, June 13th.
Program was pre-recorded in front of an audience of one real live cat. You're listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton, who at the music and arts venue Fogartyville provide a center for creative expression and community engagement that amplifies the voices of our diverse community and promotes peace, sustainability, democracy, and economic and social justice. I am Lou Larini, and thanks for tuning in to Surreal News, where we offer opinions, comments, and perspective on the events of the week, which do not necessarily represent the station, its board, or anyone else other than the person who expressed them. For the superstitious among us, happy Friday the 13th, and hoping no black cat crosses your path. Earlier this week, he who would be king and his rarely seen queen attended a performance of the musical Les Miserables at the Kennedy Center. For those who haven't seen it, Les Mis follows a group of 19th century king-hating revolutionaries who take to the streets against their authoritarian government, but ultimately see their hopes of change crushed. It's hard to see how that could have any real relevance today. Stay tuned until half past the hour to hear my conversation with activist Sarah Parker, executive director of Voices of Florida, who was in Los Angeles and participating in the demonstrations continuing in that city to oppose immigration policies of the current administration. Demonstrations that prompted unsolicited deployment of the National Guard and the U.S. Marines for the first time since 1965, when LBJ sent the National Guard to Alabama against Governor George Wallace's wishes to protect civil rights demonstrators. How times have changed. But first, hear about how some folks will protest in Washington, D.C., despite threats of retribution. As tanks, armored vehicles, and thousands of troops descend on Washington, D.C. for a massive July 4th Army parade, President Donald Trump has declared protesters could be met with very big force. Planned protests on the same day in the nation's capital are proceeding with caution. This parade sets a very dangerous and ominous mood, said Andy Z, organizer of a Refuse Fascism march to Washington to the White House on the afternoon of June 14th, before the Army's parade begins. Speaking in the Oval Office on June 10th, Trump said, if there's any protester wants to come out, they will be met with a very big force. This is people that hate our country, he added. Trump has deployed 4,000 National Guard members and 700 Marines to Los Angeles to crack down on ongoing protests of his administration's widespread deportations. Z and others, preparing to rally against the June 14th military parade, say the moment is ripe. There is no precedent for a situation like this, Z said, comparing the parade, which falls both on the Army's 250th anniversary and Trump's birthday, to something that Germany did in the 1930s. We should make no mistake that this is fascism. Law enforcement officials say they are already laying down 18.5 miles of anti-scale fencing and 17 miles of bike rack concrete barriers in preparation for the parade. They plan to screen everybody entering the National Mall with 175 magnometers, according to Matt McCool, special agent in charge of the Secret Service's Washington field office. Drones will patrol from overhead. Many are opting to protest anywhere but the nation's capital as part of the No Kings protest organized by Indivisible and other progressive groups. More than 1,700 demonstrations spanning multiple continents are in the works, according to organizers. But others will not be deterred from Washington. Four demonstrations, including Refuse Fascism, have applied for a First Amendment permit for June 14th from the National Park Service as of early June, according to documents shared with USA Today. Another, the national protest against Trump and the war machine, plans to draw up to 20,000 demonstrators to Meridian Hill Park, around 1.5 miles north of the White House. A military parade celebrating Trump and the Army is an outrageous insult to the American people, the group wrote in its permit application. The protest will take aim at both Trump for eroding people's democratic rights or union rights, vilifying immigrants, gutting social services, as well as the Army, the biggest cog in the war machine. Organizers of other planned permits who say they will demonstrate peaceably are taking extra security cautions. Marcus Anthony Hunter, who is leading the National Black Justice Collective's ceremonial walk around the reflecting pool next to the Lincoln Memorial hours before the parade begins, said organizers have thoroughly consulted with security to ensure they stay within the rules. You can have as many security checks as possible and still run up against things you don't expect, he said. Organizers of the walk originally planned to meet at the Washington Monument, but were deterred when law enforcement released a new security map that made it not feasible, Hunter said. The group's permit also originally included Freedom Plaza, an open area a block from the White House often used for protests, but chose to relinquish it because a large staged event would be a vulnerability, he said. A ICE has widened the aperture of immigrants it is targeting, from the so-called bloodthirsty criminals to include those just trying to make a living. Immigration authorities raided an Omaha meat production plant this week and took dozens of workers away in buses, leaving company officials bewildered because they said they had followed the law. The raid happened around 9 a.m. at Glen Valley Food south of Omaha, an area where nearly a quarter of the residents were foreign-born, according to the 2020 census. A small group of people came out to protest the raid, and some even jumped on the front bumper of a vehicle to try to stop officers in one location, while others threw rocks at officials' vehicles as a white bus carrying workers pulled away from the plant. Chad Hartman, president of the food packaging company, said the front office was stunned by the aggressive nature of the federal officials' raid and confused by why the company was targeted. "My biggest issue is why us," Hartman said. "We did everything by the book. The plant uses E-Verify, federal database used to check immigration status of employees," when he said as much to the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers who carried out the raid. They told him the E-Verify system is broken. "I mean, what am I supposed to do with that?" Hartman said. "This is your system, run by the government, and you're raiding me because your system is broken?" Omaha police and the Douglas County Sheriff said immigration officials had warned them about their plans, and their department helped block off traffic around the neighborhood where many food production plants are located while ICE officers worked. Meatpacking plants rely heavily on immigrant workers who are willing to do the physically demanding work. The industry has not yet been the focus of President Donald Trump's immigration enforcement efforts, but the administration has been intensifying its efforts in recent weeks. Trump called out the National Guard this week to respond to ongoing protests in Los Angeles over his immigration policies. CEO and owner Gary Rothwer told WOWT in Omaha that he wasn't made aware of the operation ahead of time. He said federal agents entered the plant with a list of 97 people they wanted to screen. "Of course not. It's a raid," Rower said, whose company makes Gary's Quick Steak brand of ready-to-grill steak. Estefani Favilla, a supervisor at Glen Valley Foods, said she was in a morning meeting when federal officials began banging on the plant's doors, yelling "Homeland Security." "They just came in and said that it was a raid and that we had to get everybody out of production," Favilla said. Employees were separated by those who had documents showing they were U.S. citizens and those who had valid work documents and those who did not have documents, she said. About 70 people were taken away in buses with the windows blacked out, Favilla said. Among them were two of her cousins who immigrated from Honduras, she said. ICE officials confirmed in an email that the raid at Glen Valley Foods, saying it was based on ongoing criminal investigation into the large-scale employment of aliens without authorization to work in the United States. They said it was likely the largest work site enforcement operation in Nebraska since the start of Trump's second term. Hartman, the company president, said he planned to contact Republican Rep. Don Bacon, who represents the district, and other Nebraska leaders to try to get answers. By Tuesday afternoon, Bacon had issued a statement saying ICE raid had sought to investigate stolen identities and that ICE verified that Glen Valley Foods complied with the E-Verify 100% and is a victim in this as well. Douglas County Commissioner Roger Garcia, who rushed out of a regular meeting that morning after learning about the raid, said the community is shaken. "It clearly instills a lot of fear," said Garcia, who represents the area. "People are asking me if this is going to continue for multiple days here in Omaha. People are asking me if this is going to spread to other cities." You're listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. Some Palm Beach County commissioners were outraged by the decision to end DEI in the county to save necessary federal grant money. President Donald Trump's war on diversity, equity, and inclusion continued his march into Palm Beach County last week when county commissioners mostly reluctantly suspended programs designed to help women, minorities, and other disadvantaged groups succeed. Faced with losing $329 million in federal grants, commissioners said they had no choice but to stop giving women and minority-owned businesses preference in county contracts. Instead, the firms will compete for contracts against other small businesses that are mostly owned by white men. The decision, which prompted three commissioners to emotionally recount their own experiences with discrimination, came roughly 6 weeks after county school board took similar action. Under threat of losing money, clerk and comptroller Joe Abruzzo said he recently did the same. Commissioners also eliminated the county's Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, created in 2021. It was never staffed. They also removed the words gender identity or expression from the county's non-discrimination policy. But the policy will continue to prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation. County Attorney Denise Kaufman said she will be reviewing other county laws and policies to make sure they don't conflict with Trump's executive orders. Trump called for the elimination of diversity programs, which he described as dangerous, demeaning, immoral, and banned the use of the term gender identity. It's awful, Commissioner Greg Wife said of the decision facing the commission. But he and others said short of filing a lawsuit to challenge Trump's orders, commissioners had no choice but to eliminate the program that was created when a $700,000 study in 2018 showed women in minority-owned businesses weren't getting their fair share of county work. A $450,000 follow-up review is underway. The threats facing the commission were significant. Not only have federal agencies threatened to withhold grants and municipalities that don't comply with the orders, but Attorney General Pam Bondi has said she would file criminal false claim charges against government leaders. The reality is if we don't comply, we lose millions of federal money that our taxpayers sent to Washington, Weiss said. Losing that money will hit our most vulnerable residents, seniors, families, and kids who need county services the hardest. Commissioner Sarah Baker, in contrast, gave full-throated support to Trump's policies, which face hundreds of lawsuits across the country. Quoting the dictionary, the Bible, and the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., Baxter said she was glad to be rid of the Minority and Women Business Enterprise Program that launched in 1991, abandoned for a decade, and hailed as historic when it was revived in 2018. I can't be in more support of something that gets rid of things based on race, whether it's one way or the other, Baxter said. That's a terrible way for society to thrive, and we got rid of it, and to go back to it, it is awful. A merit-based system provides the best value for county taxpayers and follows the teachings of the Bible, which is all about love and bringing people together regardless of the color of their skin, Baxter said. It also channels the goals that King espoused in his famous I Have a Dream speech, she said. He said he dreamed of a day when we would be judged based on the content of our character and not the color of our skin, she said, paraphrasing the speech King gave during the 1963 March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. That is exactly where I want to be. While Commissioner Marcy Wood said she shares her colleagues' views, other commissioners disputed Baxter's claims. Commissioner Bobby Powell, the only black commissioner, said Baxter was not painting a full picture of King's views or his dreams. He quoted King's The Other America speech, where the civil rights leader railed against millions of blacks perishing on the lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. Dr. King did have a dream, but there are also two Americas, Powell said. Commissioner Joel Flores, the only Hispanic on the commission, said, "People who haven't walked a day in my shoes don't understand the myth of merit-based system. As a combat veteran with a master's degree and the ability to speak two languages, he said he's still judged by his Hispanic heritage. Knowing that, he said, every time I want to speak in public, I have to polish the words that I'm going to use so my goddamned accent doesn't show up, he said. It's a practice repeated by Latino youths who know they won't be judged on their merit. Some, he said, don't hide their disdain for him. I've been told by fellow military personnel to go back to my country, said Flores, who was born in the United States. You have not seen what I have seen, he said. You have no idea how my heart breaks right now. Don't try to paint this as something else other than what it is. We deserve better. We deserve the freedom that I fought for. Scientists have rebuked the administration cuts to the NIH, noting how they stop important research that benefits all Americans far more than the taxpayer dollars saved. Dozens of scientists, researchers, and other employees of the National Institutes of Health issued a rare public rebuke this week, criticizing the Trump administration for major spending cuts that harm the health of Americans and people across the globe, politicize research, and waste public resources. More than 60 current employees sent their letter to NIH Director Dr. Jay Bhattachary, Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and members of Congress who oversee NIH. Bhattachary was scheduled to testify this week at the Senate Appropriations Committee about his agency's budget. Overall, more than 340 current and recently terminated NIH employees signed the letter, about 250 of them anonymously. In that letter, NIH staff members said that the agency had terminated 2,100 research grants, totaling about $9.5 billion and an additional $2.5 billion in contracts since President Donald Trump took office on January 20th. The contracts often support research from covering equipment to nursing staff working on clinical trials. These terminations throw away years of hard work and millions of dollars and put patient health at risk, the letter said. NIH clinical trials are being halted without regard to participant safety, abruptly stopping medications, or leaving participants with unmonitored device implants. In a statement shared with Reuters, Bhattachary said the employee's letter has some fundamental misconceptions about the policy directions the NIH has taken in recent months. Nevertheless, respectful dissent in science is productive. We all want the NIH to succeed. The NIH is the world's largest public funder of biomedical research and has long enjoyed bipartisan support from U.S. lawmakers. The Trump administration has proposed cutting $18 billion or 40% from NIH's budget next year, which would leave the agency with $27 billion. Nearly 5,000 NIH employees and contractors have been laid off under Kennedy's restructuring of the federal health agencies, according to NIH staff. A spokesperson for the Department of Health and Human Services, which oversees NIH, said the agency's staffing must evolve to meet changing priorities and to ensure good use of taxpayer dollars. The official also defended NIH's funding decisions, saying the agency was working to remove ideological influence from the scientific process. Dr. Jenna Norton, a program director with NIH's Division of Kidney, Urological, and Hematological Diseases, was one of 69 current employees who signed the letter. She said speaking out publicly was worth the risk to her career and family. I am much more worried about the risks of not speaking up, Norton said. There are some very real concerns that we are being asked to do likely illegal activities and certainly unethical activities that breach our rules. About 20 NIH employees who were recently terminated as probationary workers or subject to reductions in force added their names to the letter. In the letter, Norton and other NIH employees asked Bhattachary to restore grants that were delayed or terminated for political reasons, while officials ignored peer review or to cater to political whims. They wrote that Bhattachary had failed to uphold his legal duty to spend congressionally appropriated funds. Dr. Benjamin Feldman, a staff scientist and core director at the NIH's Institute of Child Health and Human Development, said he and other researchers want to work with Bhattachary on reversing the cuts and restoring the NIH as a beacon for science around the world. This is really a hit to the whole enterprise of biomedical research in the United States, Feldman said. The NIH employees based in Bethesda, Maryland, named their dissent the Bethesda Declaration, modeled after Bhattachary's Great Barrington Declaration in 2020 that called on public health officials to roll back lockdowns during the COVID-19 pandemic. Our hope is that by modeling ourselves after the Great Barrington Declaration, that maybe he'll see himself in our dissent. So named by its creator, Food from God, that has saved millions of children from starvation, has had its funding cut. Reaching into one of the giant white sacks piled up in his Georgia food processing plant, Mark Moore pulls out a fistful of shelled peanuts, what he calls God's food, and lets them roll through his fingers. A former evangelical missionary, Moore is co-founder of Mana Nutrition, a nonprofit that says it has fed 10 million children across the globe since 2010 with packets of peanut butter paste made in the small farming community of Fitzgerald, about 180 miles south of Atlanta. This saves children, said Moore, 58, clutching a bunch of protein-rich legumes. It's not an overstatement. We defeat death. But Mana is now in the midst of its own struggle for survival. Deep cuts in federal programs targeting international aid programs under President Donald Trump have threatened to choke off the financial lifeline that has allowed the nonprofit to carry out its life-saving mission. Since January, the U.S. Agency for International Development, created during the height of the Cold War by then President John F. Kennedy, has been all but dismantled by the Department of Government Efficiency, Trump's cost-cutting entity led until recently by billionaire Elon Musk. In announcing the termination of its contracts, which accounted for about 90% of Mana's $100 million annual budget, Doge sent a letter to the nonprofit saying its work was not aligned with agency priorities. Efforts to reach a spokesperson for the State Department, which oversees USAID, have been unsuccessful. In two terse letters sent to Mana and reviewed by Reuters, USAID offered no specific reasons for terminations other than to say that the work was not in the national interest. Mana has just enough cash on hand to keep running through August at most, Moore says, but he seems unshakable in his optimism about the future of his mission. He's vowed to keep his 80,000-square-foot factory going and his 130 workers employed, even as the Trump administration has slashed 90% of USAID contracts and $60 billion in U.S. assistance across the board. One possibility is finding another international aid organization to support the manufacture and distribution of Mana's peanut paste packets, each about the size of a cell phone. Most of the product, which also includes powdered milk, sugar, and vitamins, goes to Africa, where Moore served as a missionary in Uganda for 10 years. It saves children who are on the brink of no return, says Mark Mannery, an expert in childhood nutrition at Washington University Institute for Public Health, who helped develop the paste's formula. It's hard to wrap your mind around the need. Moore hopes lawmakers and the Trump administration will see the value in the work and put the money back into the new federal budget. I believe that the U.S. government will remain involved in global food aid, he said, adding that he has spoken to both Republicans and Democrats who want the work to continue. Moore is also seeking contracts with other organizations that specialize in humanitarian aid for children in crisis, including Save the Children, International Rescue Committee, and UNICEF. The organizations did not immediately respond to requests for comment. One bright spot in recent years was the infusion of cash from Chris Hone, a hedge fund billionaire based in London and a philanthropist with the Children's Investment Fund Foundation. Hone's charity did not immediately respond to a request for comment. In recent years, Hone has given more than $250 million to Mana Nutrition, according to Moore, much of it already spent on expanding the plant, more than doubling its space and adding new machinery. But Mana needs new contracts to go forward or another donation from philanthropists. We've been put on earth for a purpose, Moore said. Jesus told his disciples to go and feed the people. So we've been hustling nonstop. You're listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. Coming up next is my conversation with Sarah Parker, who is in Los Angeles.
I'm Lou Lorini, and I'm happy to welcome back Sarah Parker, who is Executive Director of Voices of Florida, which she co-founded and was originally named Women's Voices of Southwest Florida. Now, in addition to being a Democratic State Committee woman, is helping to organize some of the 50-51 protests across the state. Thanks for coming on in this, what must be very busy week for you. You know, I understand, you know, you've been in Los Angeles over the weekend. What do you see is going on in Los Angeles, and what are you doing there?
Yeah, so just for clarity, you know, we are a national partner with 50-51, so we're helping organize protests across the nation. Right now, I got in a few days ago. I have been down on the ground providing medical support to people, and I want to go ahead and push back against the narrative that this is not a peaceful protest. There are people, obviously, that are disruptors or agitating, but all in all, 99% of the people I've seen, the people I've been with on the ground, have been completely peaceful.
Yeah, clearly, you know, there are some trying to push that narrative that's obviously, you know, the justification for, you know, bringing in the National Guard. I mean, have you been to an action where the National Guard is, and how are protesters responding to that?
Yeah, I was definitely there yesterday, giving out water and masks, and, the National Guard was there. There wasn't really any contact with the National Guard until probably the end. So they're, you know, people are responding to it as I think anyone would. They feel like their state is being weaponized. Their state National Guard is being weaponized by this administration. And even Governor Newsom said that it wasn't necessary. LAPD had it under control or was getting it under control. And I think that it's important to note that. And now, since I've woken up this morning, it is being said that the Marines are on their way. But we've been hearing that for over 24 hours.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, of course, you know, an interesting side note is that, you know, the last time, you know, a president, you know, sent the National Guard to a state without, you know, it being, you know, requested by the governor, quite ironically, it was in 1965, and Lyndon Johnson sent the National Guard to protest civil rights protesters in Alabama. You know, kind of a different narrative today. You know, and you know, but you know, and from what I understand, you know, like the protests, you know, in Los Angeles, you know, erupted for you know reasons that are like you know. We're seeing here in Florida, you know, like that raid on the Tallahassee work site where they just, you know, jumped in and grabbed 200 people. Now, from what I understand, you know, the L.A. Protests started to protest them going to, like, Home Depot.
That's actually inaccurate. So what happened is, it's like we have to remember L.A. is supposed to be a sanctuary city, right? So that's point A. Point B is that what happened was a few days ago, I want to say Friday or Thursday, they found out that they were keeping immigrants in the basement of the federal building without any food, without any water. And there was a pregnant woman down there. This is from what I'm understanding on the ground. And with the pregnant woman, she started to get sick. She was very visibly pregnant, and they had to release her to a hospital. When they did that, I guess the story broke. And then I think the president of SEIU, don't quote me on that, he and a different representatives went to the federal building and asked to see the conditions. And they opened the door, and I've heard different things, but at that point in time, they arrested the SEIU leader. And that's what sparked the protest. Yep, that's what actually sparked it. And then, you know, we saw what happened at Home Depot. And it slowly became more escalated. Once they sent in the National Guard, you know, we're hearing a lot of chants like National Guard out of L.A. and ICE out of L.A. They obviously do not want them there.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, yeah, I you know, well, I didn't actually misread it. I probably didn't read it carefully enough. You know, I knew that, you know, in California, you know, like, you know, that raid on that work site, Tallahassee, and I guess they've been doing it for a while, you know, been going to pick people up at like Home Depot where, you know, day laborers will often gather, you know, looking for work, you know, like anybody else, make some money, support your family, you know.
Absolutely. And they pay taxes. The only reason I said that is because, you know, we're hearing different things, and a lot of the L.A. protesters wanted to be clear, and I heard them talking to the media yesterday about, like, the conditions and what really, like, sparked the resistance, I guess. And now we're seeing different pushbacks against across the state in response and in solidarity with L.A., but also in response to the ICE raids in those states.
Yeah, and as we know, there's no love lost between, you know, Governor Newsom and, you know, he who would be king, or California and the federal government. So I guess, you know, this seems to be, you know, I don't know, you know, another act of retribution, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something. It's something. I think that he is specifically targeting California and Democratic governors, and, you know, he did say the other day that he's going to deploy military everywhere. So
yeah, you know, before we get into how that's going to impact Florida, let's just, you know, talk a little bit about what's coming up at the end of this week. Even though, you know, things have been pretty active here. I mean, I know you must keep up with the local news. You know, there was a protest in, you know, Bradenton outside the courthouse, you know, to protest that guy that, you know, shot a guy, you know, basically in, you know, cold blood, and calling out stand your ground. And, you know, he just happened to be black, big coincidence. And the shooter, of course, was white, you know. But of course, you know, the biggie is going to be June 14th, you know, the No Kings, you know, and that's going to be, you know, all over the state. You know, I know when I first, you know, after I contacted you to, you know, I was always looking at this story anyway, you know, and popped up the 5051 map of how many protests are going to be on June 14th. And it's pretty robust. It looks like from my estimates, it's like, you know, over 1,500. Protests are going to happen that Saturday. You know, what do you think people need to learn from this protest?
Well, first thing I think they need to take is hope, right? There are people out there fighting for them. If you're not taking the streets that day, you know, if you can and you're not, I really think that we need to start discussing what side of history we want to be on, right? The second thing is that, you know, we're getting together across not only Florida, but across the nation with different groups, a lot of different partner groups, including 5051, Indivisible, ACLU. There's a bunch. And we're getting together across the state to stand in solidarity against, this administration. We don't want kings. We didn't the way that he is moving, the way that he is utilizing his power to rip through our Constitution is problematic. You know, he's even made jokes and made pictures of him with a crown. He is a president. He needs to listen to the rest of the branches of government, and we are seeing him refuse to do so. So we're standing up. We're pushing back. The same day he's having his birthday or not birthday military parade that a lot of veterans have been pushing back against, too. So while he does that, we're going to gather across the country and make sure our voices are heard, because people forget that our voices are also a part of the government in a way, right? We're like the fourth arm. So we wanted to utilize that, and we wanted to come together and say no. And we also wanted to come together and say no against the big, bad bill. We wanted to come together and say no to the ICE raids, say no to the anti-immigration laws. I think people are tired, and they believe that America should be a democracy, not an authoritarian fascist regime. And I know people do not like that word, but if you really look up the word fascism and really go down like the check boxes, you would see that we pretty much checked every box. And it is time for us to wake up and really realize that like this is what we're living in. And that goes back to the first point, is that we have to start making a decision of what side of history you want to be on. These protests will all be peaceful. We need to make sure we retain the peacefulness across the country and across Florida, because we don't want to play into their narrative. We need to frame the story. We need to frame the story as this administration is the enemy.
Yeah, you know, and just to like go back a little bit to what you said about what our, you know, our individual purposes or role is, you know, in this government, you know, is perhaps the most important role. We're voters, and the elected officials, you know, oh yeah, by the way, they work for us, you know, and whoever voted for them or not, but they work for us, and we don't work for them. And you know, what's the expected attendance of all these protests in Florida? Is enthusiasm continuing to grow? I know I talked to you back in March, and it was. It was, you know, pretty exciting, and it seemed like it was moving forward. You know, is that continuing?
Yes, it's definitely continuing. The more that he stomps on our civil rights, the more that he steps all over our Constitution, we're seeing more people get out in the streets. They're starting to realize, and they're starting to wake up. I know across the country we're looking at probably 500,000 at this moment. That's not checking the sign-ups today. I would say easily several thousand, if not close to 100,000 people will be out in the streets in between all the different protests in Florida. We know April 5th, I believe about 3 million people mobilized. So we're expecting really high numbers. We're expecting very high numbers. So people are upset. And they're specifically upset that he's utilizing the military for his birthday. You know, when people are being separated from their families, people are worried about their Social Security benefits. People are worried about how are they going to pay bills with inflation. People are very upset, and rightfully so. So I expect massive numbers in Florida, 100%, and massive numbers across the nation.
Oh, I do understand, you know, he's going to be in Washington in his own little box there watching the parade. Is there anything planned for his Florida home at Mar-a-Lago? I know there's something going on.
There's going to be an event. There's going to be an event June 14th at outside. There's going to be a march from Mar-a-Lago. Florida Valkyries, 5051 South Florida, and a few other groups will be marching to his mansion. And there will be a protest outside of there on the sidewalk.
Okay, yeah, and later on we'll get to some specifics about what's going on here in Sarasota. You know, I know there is going to be, you know, at least one big event at Fort Hamill. J.D. Hamill Park.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
All right, I just want to interrupt for a second. This is WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota, and WVTV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. And I'm speaking with Sarah Parker, Executive Director of Voices of Florida, who also works with 5051 organizing protests. Okay, after what happened in California this week, or what's happening, I guess, in California this week, send a National Guard to L.A., which was not requested. Are you guys fearful of, well, you know, I know you work nationwide, but people in Florida, are you fearful that, you know, Florida's government, who's on board with the administration, is going to start to do that too? You know, if protests as expected are robust, lots of people?
I really don't believe they're going to do that June 14th. I mean, like, let's be honest. The 5051 protests have been incredibly peaceful. If they did that, it would be, again, overreach. It would be antagonizing. And it would be a stupid strategy on his part, Governor DeSantis and President Trump. So I really do not believe that it's going to happen. However, we're seeing a lot of solidarity protests that are popping up, and I think that that is getting pretty intense. You know, the energy is palpable. So I'm interested to see how this plays out over the next few weeks. And I really hope, again, that they don't need to. That is how you instigate and you antagonize and you create a non-peaceful protest. So I think we're going to be fine in Florida. And if it does happen, then we still have to keep pushing back. We still have to resist. It's a part of our story now. This is our civil rights moment. And I don't think that, like, I've been saying this for a minute, and people look at me pretty weird, definitely as a black woman, but, like I really want to be clear. People's families are being disappeared. People can't afford to eat. People can't afford to pay their bills. This is a part of, we're, like, right now we are a part of history. And it goes back again to being, like, what side are we going to be on, right? So even if he does, let's say he does, we have to continue to stay peaceful. We have to continue to be on the streets. We have to continue to show solidarity. We have to continue to talk about the big bad bill. We have to continue not saying that the protests are a distraction. They're not. These are real people with real lives. I mean, there was someone in Sarasota that was just abducted by ICE, and we have to stop saying arrested. They were abducted, right? So if they do, then more power to them. It's a waste of money when there are children in Florida that are hungry, that can't get lunch, can't get breakfast. There are people in Florida that are houseless. So, you know, he would really show his face on that and show that he doesn't care about Floridians. He only cares about power. And we know that Governor DeSantis only cares about power. So it'd just be another plus one or another check mark on his list of I don't care about Floridians checklist.
Well, you know, you make an awful lot of sense, Sarah, but what concerns me is that doing a stupid thing has never, or that a thing that they would do would be stupid has never stopped DeSantis or Trump. And, you know, I know DeSantis has his little private army that he's probably just waiting to use somehow like this. But hopefully, hopefully you're right and I'm wrong.
Yeah, and I mean, if they do, they do. If they do, they do. I just don't think that, I guess what I'm saying is I don't think that it matters. Does that make sense? Like, if he does, then he does. We still have to take the streets. If he doesn't, that's great. Like, he didn't spend our taxpaying money to have the National Guard or his military police attend a protest. Like, that's where I am. I'm not saying he's not going to. I'm just saying it would be stupid.
Well, you know, what's also, you know, very concerning to me is that, you know, this action, like you said, this action that's going on in L.A., you know, we can sit here in Florida or people can, you know, sit around in my home state, Massachusetts, and say, well, it isn't happening here. You know, it's happening in L.A., but as you accurately pointed out, I think this is kind of a blueprint. I mean, they would like to do this everywhere, and my question is this: kind of a tipping point towards the beginning of an authoritarian crackdown? I mean, you know, this is what, you know, picking up Abrego Garcia, you know, just for no reason, grabbing those mm-hmm. Venezuelans and sending them down to El Salvador, you know, denial of habeas corpus. I mean, this is like the next step, isn't it? I mean, now let's just get a bunch of soldiers on the street and start grabbing anybody. Right?
I mean, yeah, I mean, he said that clearly. He said that clearly. He said that he was going to do that. He said, I'm going to send the military everywhere. This is not a slippery slope. He's jumping off of the cliff, period. So, absolutely, he said he was going to do that. I think this is going to be a blueprint. I think in some ways, minus the 1% of disruptors that are out here, I think in some ways that the protests are going to be a blueprint. Like, we're seeing it happen in Chicago. They shut down the Chicago Immigration Court for peaceful protesters, and they're planning on going out there every single day now to stand outside of the Immigration Court. We're seeing it happen. So I think, yeah, I think L.A. is going to be a blueprint in a lot of ways. Different, right? Because, like, it's California's a blue state. And Florida and other southern states are red states, so I think it might be a little bit of a slower catch, but I digress. I think, yeah, no, he's definitely going to – this is the blueprint. He's going to utilize military in every way that he can because he thinks he can. And until someone stops him that's like the government or the other two branches, he's going to keep going.
Yeah, you know, and of course, you know, it's you know, disturbing and but important to point out, you know, this has only been going on for less than 200 days, you know, and we see where we're at.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And you know, all through the election, I mean, through you know the last year, I think everybody was like kind of you know shaking their heads at what he was saying and nodding and going, you know, here's 2025. Here's what they want to do, and here's how they're going to do it. And then little by little, you know, we're seeing them doing it, and at a pace a lot faster. That's what I read. I mean, you know, people that study this study dictators, you know, all, you know, claim that, you know, he's doing things, you know, with, you know, law firms and universities, and, you know, he's going much faster than, say, Orban or even Putin. Took Putin like years to get to this point.
You know? Yep. So, he's definitely going much faster. And I think that it's a good thing. Something you brought up earlier that I forgot to talk about was, like, it's not us, it's them. Like, they're not hurting us, they're hurting them. I think, like, people have to realize, like, eventually it's going to be you, right? Like, it starts off with marginalized people. Like, I've been studying fascism, and, like, I did a presentation for Florida Now, and so I had to do a lot more, like, history and, like, what does fascism look like and scapegoating marginalized communities. And then eventually, they're no longer scapegoating marginalized communities and oppressing them. They're going to oppress everyone. And by that point, it's going to be too late because your marginalized communities are going to be beaten down and you are going to be under oppression. And I think that, like, something else with 5051 is that I noticed is, like, a lot of specifically white cis men, but a lot of white people are feeling oppression for the first time. And it's really scary. Or they feel the threat of oppression. And with that, they don't really know what to do. So, like, my advice as a black woman that has felt oppression since, like, the day that I was born, right, is to organize, to mobilize, to educate. Like, education is so incredibly important, right? And to continue and to recognize something Stokely Carmichael said that I was listening to one of his tapes was that the United States has no conscience, but your community does, right? So, like, talk to your community. Start having those harder conversations with the people, your neighbors that voted for Trump that you still have coffee with. Like, we have to start getting a little uncomfortable. Because if we don't, we're going to be living really uncomfortable in the next year. And you're right, it's only been 200 days. We have 4 years, we have 3 years left. And I don't even want to say it. I can't imagine what he would do next. But at this point, nothing surprises me from this man.
Well, yeah, I mean, when, you know, when his Secretary of Homeland Security, you know, and asked what habeas corpus means, said it's the constitutional right of the president to throw anybody he wants out of the country. It's like, of course, that's completely wrong. But, but you know, and shows just how ignorant she is. But then again, too, though, you know, that's another whole point of this whole routine. You know, he's put in people in power who are just basically, you know, their only qualification is that they'll do whatever he says without question. Yep. And the most dangerous one right now is Pete Hegseth, who runs the Pentagon. I mean, this is, you know, a lot of Army guys.
Yeah, I mean, we saw what he did on Signal. And also, like, I feel like he took all the bright color crayons out of the box and left the really dark, dull ones. So, yeah, like, one of the things that my mentor said to me recently was that the people who think they're the smartest people in the room are the most dangerous. And that's what we're seeing in this administration. Like, they are not the smartest people in the room, but they all believe to be the smartest people in the room, as you just recently mentioned, not knowing the definition of habeas corpus or the guidelines or limitations. So they're incredibly dangerous. Like, I think that people are like, oh, you guys can't use the word fascism. And I really implore everyone to go look up what fascism is, because, like, we're already there. Some of you are like, oh, we're on the road to it. No, we pulled up into the cul-de-sac. We're about to be at the house. We are already there, off the interstate. So I think that people need to start recognizing that. And it's not going to look like, you know, the 1900s fascism. It's going to look like 2025 fascism. It's going to look like 2025 authoritarian regime. Like, yeah, they're not going to take your Facebook away immediately. But they're going to do little things, and it's going to be a slow trickle. And it's going to be too late. You're going to already be in the front door of the house by the time a lot of people wake up. So I really hope we start again having those harder conversations and recognizing that we are right now in this moment living. He just deployed the military for peaceful protesters to antagonize them against the governor's will. Right now we are currently living in a fascist state, in a fascist country.
Yeah, well, you know, on that note, you know, I want to thank you, Sarah Parker, for joining me today, you know, and giving me this update from Los Angeles. You know, I think what you had said earlier is really important for people to note. You know, when they started, you know, persecuting, you know, trans people, you know, because, you know, they were an easy target, because there are a lot of Americans who don't even know a trans person, because there are so few of them. But they vilified them and they demonized them, and they said, okay, trans people are awful and we can't let them do anything. Well, you know, it pretty soon it's going to be you and me, you know, basically.
Yep.
And that's kind of the point. So, you know, once again, you know, I want to thank you again. You know, before we get off, I just want to let everybody know that, you know, that is listening here in Sarasota, that at J.D. Hamill Park, on the east side of Tamiami Trail along Bayside, you know, there is going to be a rally at 5:30 on the 14th, and at 6:30 there will be a pride flag assembly, and then it's going to be a march across the bridge. You know, parking, I guess, is going to be on Gulfstream Ave, Bayfront parking lots, Palm Ave, Garage, State Street Garage, and please follow your Facebook. You know, and all that stuff will be posted along with updates, as well as there's going to be, I know, an event here in Bradenton, and I know there's going to be one in Ellington, I believe, on the 14th. And that's just locally. You know, like I said, you know, if you go and you pull one map, you know, it's little blue dots, you know, and the United States looks very, very blue when you look at that. Okay? So... All right. Thanks again, Sarah. Is there anything
else? No problem.
Is there anything else that you think we should know?
No, just happy Pride Month. Keep sharing. Fight the narrative that 99% of these people are not peaceful. They're peaceful down here. I wouldn't just say that. There's a 1% that is not. And, have a great day. Happy Pride Month. Keep fighting the good fight.
Great. And you be safe, please.
I will try my best. Thank you. Have a good day.
Bye now.
A meteorologist who spent his career warning South Florida about hurricanes had a new warning for viewers last week. He's not sure he can do it this year. John Morales of WTVJ in Miami said the Trump administration's recent cuts to the National Weather Service could leave television forecasters like him flying blind this hurricane season. We may not know exactly how strong a hurricane is before it reaches the coastline, he warned. Clips of Mr. Morales' comments have spread widely. One posted on MSNBC's TikTok account has nearly 4,500 comments, and news outlets around the world have written articles about what he said. This isn't the first time Mr. Morales has been the subject of viral attention. In the fall, his emotional reaction to Hurricane Milton, rapid Hurricane Milton's rapid intensification also hit a nerve. Here's what Mr. Morales had to say and more about what is going on with the Weather Service. He warned of less accurate forecasts. Mr. Morales' presentation on Monday began with a clip of himself following Category 5 Hurricane Dorian in 2019 as it moved over to the Bahamas. He reassured his Florida viewers that the powerful storm would turn north before it reached their coastline, and it did, exactly when Mr. Morales assured anxious viewers it would. The clip cuts to him in present day, slightly older and now wearing glasses. He recalled the confidence he used to have in delivering an accurate forecast to his viewers. Grimly, he added, "And I am here to tell you that I am not